Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
When my first son was born, I was really struggling with depression to the point where I couldn't really hardly get up off the couch. You know, it was really that bad. And it was a real kind of contradictory time. You know, you've got the narrative of like, you have your baby and it's the best day of your life, you're going to love it and all that. And I wasn't feeling that.
But actually, this is about creating something which has long-term goals, long-term aims. And aims which doesn't matter if it's 2020 or if it's 2030, or if one person's listening or 100,000 people are listening, it's about those individual connections that you'll make and being there when someone needs you.
Another outcome of this, like, it's all over the news now, and there's like this mental health crisis is on the way, but like, we were already in a mental health crisis.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
Hey, welcome to this week's podcast. It's Mick Coyle here, and Mental Health Monday returns. We're here every single Monday with loads of great content, loads of great conversations, and two crackers on the way today. That's right, two different interviews on the horizon. Before we crack on with this week's guest, wanting to flag a couple of things. First and foremost, again, thanks to everybody taking part in the Mental Health Monday Facebook group. Also on there this week, I've been talking about the work I've been doing in regard to the Behind the Mask project, which I'm glad to have given you the heads up on this one with Joe Loughran just a few weeks ago. We're asking people to essentially explain what it is that they've been through and giving people an opportunity to share their stories. If you go on Twitter and type in Behind the Mask, there's some absolutely amazing things that people are doing and saying and taking part with, which are well worth checking out. We're doing these sort of short videos where people are removing their mask and talking through what it is that they've experienced. And I'm completely blown away by how big it's become and how many people have taken part right across the country as well. So if you can get near a social media, Twitter and Facebook, hashtag Behind the Mask, you'll see some of the incredible content that's going out there from some, my colleagues basically at radio stations up and down the country, all taking part. Check that out. Do. If you want to tell people you're listening to Mental Health Monday, or you want to post a link to the podcast, brilliant. That would be fantastic as well. Stick it on your social media channels. I've got loads of stuff coming up, of course, in the next few weeks as well. Loads of different conversations. But I wanted to spend a little bit of time this week speaking with two organizations who I'd, we had right at the start of the Mental Health Monday journey, but their sort of journey through their offer has expanded and changed, and of course has changed again with everything that's been going on this year. So I thought it was well worth having a catch up. First and foremost, with the team at The Mind Map. Phil Bridges is the man behind that. Phil will join us in just a few moments' time. And also from the Bloom Building on the Wirral, Lee Pennington, whose brilliant organisation has done brilliant work with young people in the community, and also change the way that they've worked as a result of everything that's been going on as well. So we'll speak to Lee Pennington from the Open Door Charity, and we'll talk about the work that they're doing there. We'll get links in the podcast description as well if you want to find out some more information. First up though, Phil Bridges from The Mind Map. We'll just remind ourselves what The Mind Map is all about and how it's changed and moved on in the last few years.
Yeah, so we sort of see it, Mick, as a one-stop shop for mental health provision, an online one-stop shop, I may add, where you can book counselling through the website, you can find the free mental health services that are in your area, you can read articles and advice about mental health. It's all there for you, really.
In terms of that offer and that provision, the expansion since we last spoke on the podcast has been huge, hasn't it? The different types of people that you've brought on board as well. Just give us a sense of the scale of the operation now.
Yeah, it has grown. We've got 15 associate counsellors working with us. We've got two mental health first aid trainers we work with regularly. We've got people working with us on the marketing and content creation side. And we've got a commercial guy as well. So, yeah, it has. It's taken a long time to get there, but it definitely does feel like we're starting to get some momentum now.
You mentioned the phrase the one-stop shop. Just give us a sense of what it is you're trying to sort of create around that there is this thing that people can go to. And once you're there, the offer is there and there's plenty to look into as part of that offer.
So I feel like in the mental health world, I felt like there was a lot of amazing awareness raising happening at one end of the spectrum and great sometimes great clinical intervention as well. But there's obviously a gap on that side. And my sort of being someone who's actually, you know, lived this stuff, you know, I experienced OCD, depression, anxiety. I've been on a long journey, for the want of a less cheesy phrase, you know, my own mental health, trying to get support, and I've long struggled. So every time historically I went to get mental health support, doors would either be shut or distant, you know. So to give an example, in 2014, when my first son was born, I was really struggling with depression to the point where I couldn't really hardly get up off the couch. You know, it was really that bad. And it was a real kind of contradictory time. You know, you've got the narrative of, like, you have your baby and it's the best day of your life, you're going to love it and all that. And I wasn't feeling that. You know, I was just like, I just feel like really under pressure. I'm overworked, underslept. And it was just a really tough time. So I went to the doctor and, you know, asked for support. And he said, yeah, we can support you. And I had to wait 4 months for counselling. And got banged an antidepressant. And I'm still on it now, you know, 6 years later. So I feel like I've got this plaster on my mental health still now. I feel like had in 2013, 14, I've been able to access counselling, you know, advice, maybe find some free services, read articles with people who've gone through this stuff or who haven't, and learning about how healthy people stay well is just as important. I think that would have been really useful. So the kind of premise for it has very much come from a personal place, but I knew that my own insights weren't enough. So we went to John Moores University because I was a student there, and we did a survey with their young people to find out what their experiences were of online mental health provisions. And it was something like 88.5% of their students felt that they were poor, you know, that what they were encountering online was poor. So that's when I went away and you're right, you mentioned this has kind of grown steadily. So when we started, it was more on the awareness side, and we had a little bit of the action stuff, you know, around we were doing some mental health first aid training, albeit on a very small scale, and we had some counselling intervention, but it was all quite small. But the intention was there, like, not in a blow my own trumpet type way, but I do feel like the idea I had really early on has kind of stuck. It's just grown out of that. I've always seen mental health as a kind of like a pie, you know, a well-being pie, if you like, a pie chart. And I've always thought, like, you've got medication if you need it, you've got meditation, you've got exercise, you've got nutrition, you've got connection, you've got counselling. And beyond that, because I know, because I've tried everything, there's not much more you can do. So I thought, right, well, let's get all those disparate elements together and try and put them under one roof. The strap line is for the press, the UK's first one-stop shop for mental health provision. And when I wrote that, I thought, well, you know, you've got to try and, you'll know yourself, grab the press's attention. But at the same time, I've got to be careful, because it's a bit double-edged there, because you don't want to be like, we're the first, we're the best, because of it. You can't be competitive in this world, because we're not the first, we're not the best. We're one of many amazing organisations doing stuff that, for the founders of these organisations, often comes from a place of passion, you know.
In terms of your sort of personal journey as well, and I've had this conversation with a few people just very recently, that there's something very much in that idea that if it comes from a personal place, it doesn't mean that the place in which it comes from is a place of perfection and a place of, you know, zen and all of those things. That's an ongoing journey as well. How has your experience in regard to your mental health changed during that time? Have you found it helpful? Do you almost sort of take from the work elements that you do things into your personal life?
Totally. I feel really blessed, actually, to be living you know, a work life that does enhance my own well-being. It's double-edged again. Sometimes, you know, and I'm sure the founders of companies have said this, but it can be quite high pressure. I think the biggest difficulty in running your own business is the decision-making process. Very accountable. And there's so many different ways you can take an offer. And there's so many different business development opportunities. There's so many different ways of marketing it. So you constantly, you know, and as someone with anxiety, you do have that self-doubt sometimes, thinking, am I making the right decision? But I always just try and take it back to place and go, you know what, I'm working for myself and I'm helping people. And you know, haven't had to. I worked in marketing for 8 years. I was a press officer at Blue Coat, the art gallery. And I liked my time there in some respects, but it didn't fully suit me. And I was very anxious at the time, and I'd be in meetings and my mind would go blank. And I just felt like I slipped quite low in the hierarchy at that place, to be honest. And I look back to, so I always look back to times like that and think, you know what? I haven't had to step foot in an office since 2017, and I'm not rich, but you know, I make a salary, I support the family, and I love what I do, and I'm so motivated. I do think some people, maybe all people, they do better at work when they're driven. I don't know if you've read the Johan Harry book, Lost Connections, but he talks a lot in that about intrinsic and extrinsic values, and he says, if you're, you know, the more driven we are by our intrinsic values, the happier we'll be. So he uses the analogy of a piano player, and he says, if you're playing piano in a dive bar to make money, you ain't going to be happy. But if you're playing piano at home and enjoying it and loving it, that's going to make you happy. And it's the same with this stuff, you know, like I'm so driven by it that it contributes positively to my own well-being. So I feel like I've got an amazing sense of purpose. You know, obviously the medication helps, the counselling helps, but having a purpose in life. And we were speaking to a counsellor the other day about this, and I was saying to him, because it became so clear to me, I was like, actually, I suppose when you're counselling people, because I'm not a counsellor, you know, I'm not a trained counsellor, but I've got these insights. And I was saying to him, like, I think basically what it boils down to is you've got crisis intervention, haven't you? And you've also just got a bit of a softer thing where it's like helping people find their purpose in life, which is really important. To like, mental well-being isn't all about, you know, disorders. It's about, a lot of the time it can be about circumstance, and it's a grey area and it links. But I think there are a lot of psychosocial factors that underpin positive mental health. You know, if you're skint and working in a job you hate, it ain't going to help. So definitely, just to answer your question, I suppose to round it up, work on the mind map has worked wonders for my own mental health, although it can be stressful at times.
No, absolutely. And actually, I found, in terms of my own sort of journey as well, the word that it keeps coming back to, which sounds like it means average, or it sounds like it means 6 out of 10, but it doesn't. I think it means so much more. And that's the phrase sustainability. And yeah. And for me, I think sustainability in all things, from Premier League football and the football pyramid and how unsustainable that particular model is, and the horrors that come with that, to our own personal mental health and our own work and our job, that if you're in that, you know, the dive bar and you're playing the piano, it's not going to be sustainable for you. And think, right, can I do this? Does this work in 5 years, in 10 years time? Do I need to get out of here? Do I need to make plans? And I think as much sustainability as you can put in anything, and this can be in hobbies. If you start learning to play the guitar and you're going, right, I'm going to become a rock star. Well, how sustainable is that journey in terms of how far can you get and how quickly, and how old are you, you know, and all of those things. And I think that it sounds like what you've got is very much within that category. And it doesn't mean you can't have the highs, and it doesn't mean that there aren't the lows. But what it also means is that there's a certainty to it. And you touched on it right at the start about making sure that it's still very much what it was supposed to be. You know, yeah. It's not turned into something else that it wasn't. That wasn't really your idea, but you've kind of gone down that route and now you don't really like the idea. You've kept it. And actually that's given you that certainty that it's still your thing. And even if all the other things disappeared, you and your story and your journey would still be very much at the heart of the mind map.
Yeah, oh, totally. Yeah, it definitely gives it longevity. Like, we're here to stay. I think, I'll be doing mental health work in some capacity for my whole life. You know, my dad was a mental health nurse his whole career, so there's definitely, it's definitely something I've been around my whole life. So yeah, I love it. I love doing it. I'm driven by it. And it's funny because it's almost like coming fashion in a weird way. It's like, you know, it's like it's something I've been doing for, you know, I suppose researching it for 3 years before 2017. Because I did the School of Social Entrepreneurs for a year in 2016 to 17. So that was before I set the mind map up, because I thought, I know I want to set up a business with a social purpose, but I haven't got a clue how to do it. And I didn't even know what a social entrepreneur was. And I did that course and it was brilliant. But I definitely feel like I'm in it for the long run.
Yeah, and it's interesting that that's sort of the trend or the fashion thing. And I deliberately and always kind of talk that down, because I almost say, if it's fashionable, I have no interest in the fashionable part of it. Or if it's cool, I have no interest in it being the sort of the part of the zeitgeist or anything like that. Again, and that comes back to that sustainability argument, that I want it to be there when it's uncool. I want it to be there when nobody's talking about it, but there's one person looking for it. You know, because things will move on. I remember I spoke to somebody who's very, very senior in the industry of sort of mental health and the sort of the huge sort of aspects that it now encompasses. And his fear was just a few years ago was that mental health was very much the thing that people were talking about. Yeah, man, let's talk about mental health. But he said next year it might be plastic in the oceans, you know, and save the whales. And I was kind of saying at the time, well, I'm not that fussed about that. And that plastic in the ocean stuff is really important. But actually, this is about creating something which has long-term goals, long-term aims, and aims which doesn't matter if it's 2020 or if it's 2030, or if one person's listening or 100,000 people are listening. It's about those individual connections that you'll make and being there when someone needs you, regardless as if they're cool or if you're cool or if I'm cool and I'm not cool. So I was never really onto a winner.
You are.
But no, very, very much part of the conversation. And I think, as far as I can tell, people are winning those arguments that it's been proved that it's not a fad. It's not a one-off. It's actually something that's very real and actually something which, if anything, and this is very much in the case for me, people are seeing now mental health in many more aspects of life. You know, COVID-19 is a great example of this, that it's not just about the people who feel depressed or the people who feel anxious. It's about all of us. How do we all feel about our circumstances as well? And that's not something you can really take out of fashion. You know, it's merely a conversation which you've just got to carry on having. And if you don't have that conversation, another conversation will take over. So while we've got the conversation, let's keep the conversation moving.
Yeah, totally. I feel like COVID in a way has made people realize that, you know, you and I and people working in the industry, we know that we've all got mental health and we know we're all on a spectrum of mental health. You know, it's a continuum and that, you know, it can go at any time. But I think for people who previously haven't encountered poor mental health, this period has really made them think, you know, and you were talking earlier about positives about this time. I think this period has really started to make people implement positive mental health practices into their life. So, you know, seeing a lot of people exercising because there's not much else to do. So seeing people, it was like the Tour de France, wasn't it, back in March around Liverpool. And you're seeing people kind of adopt these positive wellbeing practices. And whilst COVID, as you quite rightly said, has been a terrible thing, if people take these practices into the future, you know, it's only going to be a positive thing for people's mental health, because we're all at risk from it going at any time. But I feel like for some people, if they've never struggled before, you know, maybe this period has kind of shown them, actually, I am a bit vulnerable. Once you take the things in your life that you didn't realise previously were making you tick until they're gone, and you're left with this void, people do seem to be filling the void positively. That's the only positive thing maybe you can take away from this period. You look around at your peers, don't you? And people are doing, like, you know, like Maria's taking up exercise and she's on the Zoom with this, like, scouse girl, like, come on, girls, like, you know, pump it. And Maria's like, and you're just like, she wasn't doing that like a year ago, you know? So there are positives to be taken from this period, like.
No, absolutely, absolutely. The mindmap.co.uk. When you go there, just tell us how this will work for people, because there's links on there right at the top where basically get counselling. So if you need counselling, you can get counselling. What's the process there? Who are the people you get in contact with in terms of are there charges to those counselling fees? How does it work?
So I say social enterprise. So on one side, we've got a paid-for model, which helps us sustain the business. So you can go on, you can pay, book a counsellor, choose and book a counsellor. On the other side, we work out in the communities. Like, we're working with the Flurry at the moment. So if you're from Liverpool, between 16 and 30, and you can go by the Flurry and get free counselling. So we started small on that, but we hope to be able to replicate that model further across, you know, working with other organisations. But the counsellors are all, you know, registered, accredited. There's 15 on there to choose from. Yes, that's how the counselling works.
Phil Bridges there from The Mind Map. Well worth checking out. Absolutely, and great to catch up with him after it's probably a couple of years, actually. Another man we spoke to a couple of years ago on the programme and on the podcast is Lee Pennington from Open Door. Now, Lee set up an organisation through essentially a building and series of buildings. So I thought it'd be really interesting to catch up with him to find out how the sort of physical nature of what they do has changed during the pandemic, but also how their offer has expanded. And actually, there's plenty in there that goes way beyond the Liverpool City region which they currently inhabit. So we started off by talking about the work that they've been doing and how they've had to adapt that through COVID-19.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a challenge, like it has been for everyone, but we've tried to make the best of the situation. So obviously, with the Bloom building and all the exciting things we had planned, you know, to take all of the events offered and the activities and sessions and workshops, whatever it may be, the plan was for this year to take that to the next level. So obviously, that was, you know, completely killed off by the COVID situation. But what we've tried to do organisationally is trying to evolve and push things forwards, even while we've had the buildings closed over the first lockdown, especially, and then for these first 2 months of this year. What that's meant is that we've, you know, expanded our service range. We're supporting younger people in different ways now. We've digitised a lot of what we do, so we've created a resource whereby people can access a version of the Bazaar programme where it's tailored towards being accessed from the home environment. At the same time, just restructured, you know, employed new staff and got ourselves a position where once we can reopen, we're in a position to deliver more and more exciting, innovative, creative interventions at scale, really.
When you get when you're forced to close the doors of a physical space, I guess it really sort of focuses the mind in terms of what it is that you're actually going to offer when you offer that creative outlet or that new digital outlet. You've got to be really quite specific about what it is that you do and how are you going to do it. Was that a simple conversation to have? Was it instantly obvious, or did you have to think differently about how you might move forward?
It's just a strange situation because you're never afforded the luxury of sitting back and taking stock. Usually, you know, you're just like a bounce from day to day to day to day, just like delivering and, you know, dealing with an issue and firefighting or whatever it may be. Or so being allowed time to sort of take stock and think, okay, well, what parts of what we do are the most impactful? What parts of what we do are the most important? And let's really like reinvigorate them, make sure that they're fit for purpose, make sure that if there's developments needed within, you know, an offer for younger kids than we are, because traditionally we were always 15 plus, but now we're supporting younger people slightly below that, because by taking stock and speaking to our partners at places like CAMHS, you realise that there's a huge void within Wirral for support for young people younger than 15. So, you know, make inroads into that. So then we're coming out the other end that we've trialled stuff, we've piloted, and we've got everything in order so that if something's worked well during the piloting stage, such as the Electric Islands therapeutic programme, which is like a younger version of Bazaar, then we can scale that out and, you know, link that in with different places to make sure that when the need goes up, which we all know, and NHS, you know, the data is predicting a huge spike and surge in demand for mental health services across young people and adults in the coming 12 months. When that does happen, then what we've got is ready to be delivered at scale and meet that need, really.
Which is great that it'll be ready to go as a result of the work that you've done in the last year or so. Just tell us about the Bazaar Solus sort of setup that you've got there, because I think, again, it's one of those ideas which people will think, oh, right, this might be relevant to me now, but also it might be relevant to me at some point in the near future.
Yeah. So Bazaar, our therapeutic model has always been to take people from the community, predominantly people who've been there themselves and had experience of low mood or stress or anxiety or panic attacks and everything like that, take them and train them as mentors, and actually in a peer-to-peer way, they then sit with someone who's a current member of the charity and work through a standardised therapeutic intervention based around CBT and mindfulness and chimp paradox and whatever it may be, and that's housed within Bazaar, a marketplace for the mind. Bazaar Solus is a version of exactly the same course content, exactly the same activities and a few little tweaks and bits of add-ons and evolutions that. But because there's not the peer mentor environment physically been available, it's something that you can access alone. So there's practical stuff like, you know, the work booklets that associate each week of the Bazaar course, they're digitized within Bazaar Solus and you download editable PDFs. You know, there's other stuff like activities. Instead of it being like a discussion, it might be go and do some independent research about some elements of mental health or psychology that it guides you to do, and then you come back and do that. And it just opens opportunities really in the types of activities you can do. I mean, I'm not under any illusion that one of the main principles that has played out is that one of the things that's got us to where we are really is that peer-to-peer human interaction, someone who, you know, it's not an expert or superior. It's a, you know, friendly, empathic, conversational friend, really, throughout the process of someone you can relate to. That can't be replaced. So no one's saying a Bazaar Solus is going to probably achieve the same impact as, you know, accessing Bazaar in the regular format would, but it's still going to be dynamic and it's still going to be impactful. And it means that there's something available for people when they need it. In a way that can be delivered on their terms, and ultimately, you know, it's something that we've built it for, and we're giving away the licenses free and everything to the public, and you know, during the lockdown period. But long term, if someone's got access limitations and they can't come to the Bloom Building or Blossom House or our new site at Luft, you know, there's something that's still available to them, as well as it sort of breaks away from the regional parameters really that we've sat in as a charity. Because that really, the way that we've developed, you know, that's on our ambitions and strategic vision is around taking what we do and sharing that with a national audience.
So I was going to say, so, and in terms of that, in terms of the feedback you've received from people who've sort of taken part in that, what are they saying to you about the fact that, you know, they're not sitting in the same room as somebody, they're not looking into the whites of somebody else's eyes, that they're doing it on their own? Have they still responded positively to it? Have they still sort of got to the bottom of some of the issues that you're trying to tackle through the project?
Yeah, we still get, there's still exactly the same like robust sorts of data capture, and they do like self-diagnostic tools each week, like PHQ-9 and GAD-7, and tell us how that. So we harvest a range of data that we then in real time can translate to graphs and charts and improvement data around each person's journey through Bazaar Solus, and also as a user base as a whole. And you know, so far, I think it's about 50 people we've just touched on have accessed Bazaar Solus since we rolled it out. And it's not, you know, far away from what it is, from what we achieve typically with the Bloom Building. And I won't go through all the different data sets of what that looks like, but, you know, if you plot it on a graph, someone would start off week one, you know, high, and then you want to see a trend with weeks going up and down and that, but you want to see a trend going down. And that's, again, what we're seeing with Bazaar Solus. So we're really happy that, in a nutshell, it's working, it's effective. When it's not, and people, you know, there's feedback, then the way we always work is we can adapt that in real time and learn from that and make changes to Bazaar Solus.
How do people sign up to Bazaar Solus, or how do people sort of find themselves sort of suitable for it?
Yeah, so if you go to the Open Door Charity website, and then there's a contact form. Then within that contact form, there's a drop down that says, "What would you like to? What are you getting in touch about? Or where's to that effect?" And then there's a Bazaar Solus one. You click that, and then within 2 days, you'll be contacted back by a member of the team. And if we say 2 days, just to be safe, but typically it'll be the same day, you'll be contacted by a member of the team. They'll register you and set you up with an account. So it's that immediacy of when people need support and they reach out for it being available to them. And Bazaar Solus even as well is just the starting point of people's engagement with the charity, because even if, like, when we're opening again on the 1st of March, opening the buildings and everything in a socially distanced, COVID-safe way. But the idea is you'll do Bazaar Solus, but then even alongside at the same time or at the end of that course, you can still get involved in all of the other membership benefits of the Open Door Charity, which is getting all reinvigorated for when we open on the 1st of March. And that'll be regular yoga, boxing, circuits, and all of that alongside the mental health intervention, alongside when COVID easing allows us the more, like, you know, gigs, festivals, group-based stuff, which hopefully isn't And that's too distant a future at the moment.
Yeah, and hopefully people will be engaged, you know, through that and then be engaged to get involved in those future projects as well. And actually, that leads me on to the point I was going to raise, Lee. What's it been like for you in terms of the reasons why people have come forward to speak? Have they, has that changed over the course of the year? Have there been sort of like different aspects of the year where you've noticed people who are talking about particular issues at particular times?
Yeah. In our experience, so I'm part of a lot of like strategic conversations and speaking with different partners across CAMS and Will. So each agency, and whether that be CAMS or Age UK or whatever it is having a slightly different experience of COVID and the issues that they're coming up against. In our case, the people that we're seeing, when the first lockdown happened, straight away the worry was, oh, this is going to go ballistic, you know, numbers are going to go crazy. The opposite happened. So referrals and people accessing support across, and this is across the system, including your NHS partners and everyone like that, the referrals plummeted. There was all sorts of reasons for that, which were, you know, people didn't want to trouble the doctors, didn't trust to go to the doctors, things they were closed and all, or whatever they may be. That crept up throughout the end of last year. So we got to a stage where with us and within the partners that we speak to, it was either the same or above usual demand for that time of year towards the end of last year. Some agencies like that's continued to go up. In our case, we're not seeing a huge influx of people who, for want of a better way of putting it, someone who's usually, you know, usually fine, usually no mental health difficulties, so to speak, and then all of a sudden that they're feeling depressed and anxious. But we're not seeing a major upturn in that. But what we are seeing is that the people who were struggling anyway are a lot worse. So we're seeing a lot, and that especially translates to the younger portion of who we support, that we're seeing a lot more crisis and suicidal ideation and suicide attempts than we did post-pandemic.
And I think actually that frames a wider conversation, doesn't it, that people think that there's going to be this great moment where the pandemic's over and we all return to our everyday lives, but actually for a lot of people, their everyday lives were difficult enough. And actually, the reason that you're there in the first place was because you were aware of the issues that people were facing. And, you know, it may well be that we look back at a time where, remember that slightly odd year and a half, whatever it was, where everything went into lockdown. But actually, we need to make sure that we have medium to long-term strategies in place at all times on this, because any kind of like short-term fix won't be enough. And will ultimately let people down.
Yeah, and that falls on providers to be responsive and to be from our perspective, we've really reinvigorated the whole way the way we capture insights about what we're doing and who we do it with and numbers and the impact that's having and everything like that, because that then allows us to adapt in real time. Because nobody, like just like you said there, nobody knows. Everybody thinks and predicts that the mental health need is gonna, you know, I think there was something about 300% increase this year, I think I heard in a meeting the other day, for mental health need on Wirral. We know that's gonna happen, but it might not play out in exactly the way that people think. So it might be that, like, it could be when COVID goes away, there's this big public, you know, swell of like good feeling, for just to give an example, that has an impact upon that, you know, that mental health need. But like, so because we can't predict it, it's the responsibility of organisations like us to make sure that we're constantly aware of what the mental health picture is, what the need is, where it is, and make sure that we're built effectively enough to be able to respond to that as quickly as possible. And that's why, again, you know, something like one of the things that we're completely proud about and sets is really unique still to the sector about the charity is that, like, we've never had a waiting list. So it's when people come to us, reach out to us, there's no turnaround time, really, you know, within a day or two or whatever between them actually receiving that said support. And we just need to maintain that there's an offer like that. But we're not for everyone, you know. We are, you know, in a lot of ways quite anti-clinical. Maybe somebody. And all the evidence that we've captured over the years shows that some people prefer a more clinical, you know, professional delivery sort of model than we offer. So it's about making sure that not only are we available, but there's something available that's varied, that speaks to people of different ages and interests and needs.
Absolutely. And I think as well, as much as anything, it's about making sure that when that need is there, that those services are there, that there's not an attitude of, well, what's wrong with you? The COVID-19 problem's over. You've had your vaccination. Get on with life. For people like yourself, professional or otherwise, I think you're very professional. It will be a case of, well, let's get back to work. And you were here before COVID. You're going to be here after COVID. And organisations up and down the country, I think, are trying to make sure that they're ready to go because they know what's coming and what's potentially coming, but at the same time knowing what they were dealing with beforehand anyway, and that's probably not going to change or go away too. But I think it's probably important at this point is to raise awareness of the organisation so that people can get their heads around the fact that there is a service near them, there is an opportunity potentially to look into one or two things so that it doesn't hit them like a ton of bricks and they suddenly feel completely abandoned and alone, that they think, well, actually, maybe I'll do that Lee Pennington thing. Maybe I'll have a look at the Bazaar Solus. Maybe I'll head down to the Bloom Building and there might be something there for me. And we need to know those things. And we all need to take a responsibility for that, don't we? To clue in our friends and our family and whoever it may be so that we can signpost as best we can when people need it.
Yeah. And I think it's done something really important there that, like, another outcome of this, like, it's all over the news now. And there's, like, this mental health crisis is on the way. But, like, we were already in a mental health crisis, like, it was a waiting list, were already huge, and you know, everything around that. So if this shines a light on it, and this, you know, brings about, you know, changes in the way that mental health is funded and supported around, you know, then that'll be a positive legacy, really, won't it?
Do you think that the grassroots sort of model that you found for a lot of people will be a good way forward of engaging with people beyond that sort of more clinical environment?
I think it's absolutely vital. You know, I designed the charity because, like, you know, I was sat there feeling depressed and stuff, and I thought I wouldn't have gone to doctors, and I didn't want to talk to my mates about it or my family and stuff. So, like, there's still people completely in that headspace. So it was designed as something that I'd walk up to and feel, you know, comfortable accessing. But it's still the same. There's a million people. I say a million. There's millions of people in that same headspace, but at the same time, other people have got no problem. That, I mean, the whole, like, stigma and myth and misunderstanding around mental health, there's been huge strides in that. So I'm certain that, you know, some people it wouldn't be a problem going to the doctors, but when you do, it's about what's available to you, isn't it? But but again, that's the response. I think there's a responsibility of what's here already, but, and also a takeaway from anyone listening to this: if you've got a good idea that you think could support people around the mental health, just, like, do it, because that's all I did, you know. And now, you know, the growth of the charity that's come from that, it's just all been natural. It's not hard work, but, like, we need people with good ideas to give things a go now more than ever, really.
Great call to arms there. Open Door Charity, if you type that into any search engine, it's the first thing that comes up. Lee, just remind us again, for people who want to take part in one of those services that you've got available, the Bazaar services online now that connect with the Open Door Charity. Just tell us about the age ranges as well that you touched on, who's sort of suitable for what and how they might sort of get in contact with you.
Yeah, so as of 1st of March, which is, you know, not far away now, we're back open as normal with you know, COVID safe environments and everything, but opening our buildings and spaces, so it's sort of business as usual in terms of coming towards and accessing our mentor, peer mentor led version. The charity is available to, I mean, yeah, it's always been 15 to 30, but the reason I'm cautious is because we're only in the piloting stage between 12 to 15 at the moment, but in the not too distant future, it'll be between ages 12 to 30. If you're 17 and above, then your engagement will live within the Bloom Building. If you're between 12 and 17, then your engagement will live within Blossom House, and that, which is like the younger sibling of the Bloom Building, which we opened middle of last year. And then all of the activities and everything around the emotional wellbeing support will be delivered within Luft. But the first landing point is follow us on the socials. If I've just made that sound really confusing, which I know I have, just get in touch with us and we'll will add clarity around that. But yeah, the socials are our mouthpiece, and then the website, we're redeveloping the website, so the new one will be launched next week. So yeah, just get in touch with us via whatever means, and we'll if we can't support you, we'll be able to put you in the direction of somewhere or someone who can.
Lee Pennington, thanks for your time today, pal. Really appreciate you speaking to us.
Yeah, Bill. Cheers, mate.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.